You look just like I did at your age.
Please don't say that, Dad.
I'm 16 years old. I'm not a child.
Don't you take that tone of voice with me, young lady.
Love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
You're listening to Honey, We Made a Disney Podcast. Two friends since before Kmart was, well, Kmart was always kind of sad. Now dads reliving the Disney movies we grew up on with our own kids. I'm JB Wagner.
And I'm Eddie Ferguson. And on today's episode, we review Herbie Fully Loaded. And I confess that I didn't even watch it. But first, JB, how are you and the family?
We are doing good. We are coming out of the fog of new baby. The sun is shining again. We are starting to really be able to sleep.
It's June. That it's the month of June.
Where's this going? Oh, yes. I do know that. We got 4th of July coming up, lots of big movies coming up, but it's a huge day in our house because for a week straight, I have been able to sleep in my own bed.
Yay!
Sleeping. I didn't think it was going to be a big accomplishment, but it is. Sleeping in my own bed, man.
It's huge.
So our daughter's still in our room and she wakes up around 3, feeds and goes back to sleep, and around 6, but that's when I'm up anyways. But the fact that we're not having to do the 9 to midnight shift anymore and she's sleeping straight from 7:30, kind of feeds a little bit at 9 and then goes back to sleep, like, huge, momentous. There's running in the streets. The sun is back out. I can't tell you, Eddie. You know the struggle.
Well, and it's actually like, you know, you have like a coherent adult conversation with your wife, and it's like, oh yeah, mm-hmm.
I never doubted
my love for you. I just was like, who are we again? Like, what did we just do? Yep. Like, what's going on?
Yeah. I didn't realize how much I needed just that time from 8 to 10 and just with her and I together.
Yeah.
Like, it's when it's gone and we don't have that, it makes a huge difference to just have that back in our lives. So
It's like, oh yeah, we're best friends. Okay. Oh, yeah. This is great.
Have conversations. We can watch our own shows like Home Improvement. We might be binge watching that right now. And let me tell you this, it's one of the few old shows that still holds up. It's still funny.
You've said this, and we need to get into this. I think this might be our show. We need to, though. Sarah still hasn't seen Lost, and she really wants me to show her Lost. And so
that's priority. That's priority for your marriage.
I feel like I really need to show you like one of my favorite TV shows. I mean, we started with the right stuff. We got her The West Wing. We've been through The West Wing probably once or twice already, but yeah, we got to get to Lost. Got to get there.
Well, enough about me, Eddie. Before
that's big news. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. But enough about me. Well, let's move on. Before we get to some content that I really want us to dive into, first off, new Bluey episodes, July 12th coming out. These are new to everybody, or this has been going live for a while, and it's finally coming to Disney Plus on July 12th.
It's finally coming to Disney Plus on July 12th. Like, they've already aired in Australia. I think they probably are accessible there, but
are we getting all the episodes, or are we getting like batched like they did the last time?
So I think this is the second half of season 3.
Okay.
So if you look at like the episode counter, like episode 3 has a lot less. I can't remember the exact number. I should know because we watch Bluey nonstop. It has less episodes in the first two seasons. So I think this is the second half of season 3, which is about darn time because we need some more Bluey. Though, I do have to say, if you have not checked out the Bluey Dance Remix CD on streaming, you're missing out in your life.
Where they do all the Bluey songs, but like in a different version, or what is it?
I feel like you need... You need to just grab your Bluetooth speaker, go outside with your kids, and like turn this up as loud as you can and just dance. Enjoy it.
Dance the
just
night
dance.
Away.
Just dance. Find your inner dancing queen, JB, and dance
Well, you, Eddie, you know, I let my dancing queen out all the time. I'm just a dancing fiend.
All the time. No, actually, it is really funny. And it is, yeah, it's a lot of fun. And it's great when you're like having to drive somewhere or you got to wait in the car while mom runs into the store. And it's like, how am I going to keep these kids from going native inside the car? Bluey dance remix. Burp, burp, burp. And it is, yeah. And then we just have a grand old time. So there you go. If you haven't heard the dance remix, you got to stream that wherever you stream your favorite music. But new Bluey episodes, July 12th. And this comes as the perfect time for us because we are hosting like 50 people for like a big missions conference here. And Sarah's going to be like stuck at home with the kids for like a whole week.
Well, it's just you're banding an error.
What am I going to do with these kids during all this time? And this releases right in the middle of all that. So when you guys first sent us the announcement, Sarah was like, yes, praise the Lord. Like this comes at such a perfect time.
God knew the whole time.
Yes.
Well, moving on. The new Stan Lee documentary came out on Disney Plus. I don't know if there's another one, but I called it new. This was part of my Father's Day. I sat down and watched this. I believe it was either Sunday afternoon. Yeah, it was Sunday afternoon. I chose to watch this instead of going to see The Flash or going to see Spider-Man across the universe again. I was going to go see that, but I chose this instead, Eddie, and I'm glad I did. Felt like I learned a lot. Felt like I got a more full picture of who he is. What were some of your takeaways? What were some feelings? Because you watched this at the same time. You were debating watching this, and then we texted each other, and this prompted you to jump into it.
One, I just got to say, like, I mean, story aside, I just thought it was a really well-crafted documentary. I liked the styling. I definitely loved, like, just, like, the creative little, what'd you call them? Like, dioramas of, like, different moments in his life. Do we need to talk about the
action figure reenactment?
Yeah, I guess that's another way of putting
that. Diorama
is
probably the industry term for it, but basically, instead of having people reenact these moments from his life or just using stock footage, which they did, well, they used some older footage in places. Yeah. It was like miniatures. They used miniatures, but they weren't like moving. They were like stuck in time in that moment. And they just like slow pushes, slow zooms, very beautiful cinematography on these. But it was like a action figure or whatever, just kind of stuck in time in that moment while to tell the story. I had never seen this done before. Had you seen anything like this?
Yeah, neither had I. No, nothing like this. So that's kind of where I was like, wow, this is story of his life and everything. And Marvel, like aside, I'm just like, this is a really interesting way to present a documentary. And I really like it. Like I thought it was, it would have been really easy to try and match some scope of Marvel and like do something maybe a little more grandioso because of what Marvel is and everything. And so I just thought it was very tasteful to present it in that way. And I don't know, it was just, to me, very engaging, even though from a viewer standpoint, it's kind of simplistic. I doubt the execution was simplistic. I mean, you know, miniatures are not, you know, easy stretch of the imagination.
Some of those close-ups.
They were detailed.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. Like even the radio, when they're listening to the radio,
yeah,
it had very small details and textures that really shined in this. I'm not a miniatures expert whatsoever, but I'm sitting there going, man, they really... Even the dials on this thing are really like hand-drawn.
I don't know. We
stuff.
May be experts. We have watched the appendices of the making of Lord of the Rings.
You're right.
More than once.
Wow.
More than once.
I forgot.
And that is like a masterclass in miniatures. So I'm just saying, we've taken a masterclass in miniatures a couple times.
Were you as aware of the history of Stan Lee? You are more of the history buff than I am, but were you as aware of his story, his legacy, like where he kind of came into the business and his like the whole arc of his story of getting to where the Stan Lee that we know now?
I did not know his entrance into it. I had kind of heard some of the kind of the rougher parts of the story of sharing creatorship and kind of that story and all of that. Like I was familiar with that. But like his way of getting into it all, I had never heard of it. And I think for me, that was the most interesting part of this whole documentary. Like, yeah, okay, how did you create Spider-Man? How did this, you know, how did Iron Man come about and all of that? That's interesting to me, but I think I was far more intrigued by his start and just like at 17, he found himself as the editor of you know, I can't remember the name of it, but what eventually became Marvel Comics.
Timely Comics.
Timely Comics, yeah. Mainly because he stuck it out and he was faithful, you know, and he kept at it. That was really intriguing to me.
Yeah, I had heard the name Jack Kirby before, but I knew very little, almost nothing. The only thing that I knew much about was when I still lived in California, I had a coworker whose son was the guy that would take him to all of his PR hits, to all of his when he'd go to signings and book signing and magazine signings or cards or whatever. He was the guy that kind of helped him like get to his hotel, get to his room, go out to his signing, go back to his hotel to take a nap, then come back for the second round of it. Yeah. And so when he passed away, not that long ago, a couple of years ago, reached out and her son knew him pretty yeah. well at that time. And he also ran a comic book restoration company, was what her son did. But I really didn't know much about him at all. So that's why this was such an intriguing story. I knew he made Spider-Man, but I had no idea that like Captain America predated Stan Lee in this. He was one of the big ones that was before him. And I know that there's lots of other characters as well. I believe maybe the Human Torch as well. But that was interesting seeing he caught on to these magazines then, and then he came into the business and then kept them going and then brought in his own characters after that, including Thor was another big one that he brought in. What was funny was one of the anecdotes that they had in there about him was when he was deciding what to call himself. I loved this when he was like, I don't want to use my full name, which is a longer, kind of harder name to pronounce. But also he was like, I don't want to use my real name for silly comics. So he went by, his name was Stan Lee. And so he went by Stan Lee for comics because he was like, I need a pen name to kind of make it through this moment and then to get to my real job as a writer. I just thought that was, funny.
And yeah, and I love the journey that is explained in the documentary of him kind of going from viewing comics as something silly, a stepping stone into what like he really wants to do. And then I think it was his wife, right, Joan, that just says like, write the stories you want to write. Like, what's the worst thing that's going to happen? They're gonna fire you and you're going to be right where you wanted to leave anyway. And we just watched it last night, but like then he stepped in, did Fantastic Four, right? That was kind of like his first entry into that. He just kind of went for it. And I love that how he created these opportunities of, no, let's make comics something more than that. Even to the point of the moment where they have Spider-Man dealing with like drug addiction and everything and the comic book like rating committee, which I didn't even know was a thing. That was new to me in all of this because I didn't, you know, grow up reading comics and they wouldn't cover it. They wouldn't certify it, even though they it's like in the positive, like it's trying to encourage kids not to do drugs. They were like, sorry, you mentioned drugs. We can't even.
The government was asking them, please make us a comic about drugs to tell people not to use drugs. And the ratings agency was so, so uptight about it that they were like, no, the Comics Code of Authority was like, no, this is our rule. We will not go against the rule versus saying, how about you rethink the rule for a moment here? Because we're kind of being, the very mention of drugs and that doesn't get awarded. It's ridiculous.
They ran it without the certification and it was like a huge hit. It was, you know, massive.
I love that the war had some effect on this as well. The whole,
yes,
the thing where he enlisted, mm-hmm, and then immediately they were like, oh, you're good with writing and story and stuff like that. We're going to put you straight into the PR machine. Help us raise money, but then also to go to the level of the finance textbooks. This was crazy. Them using
that was them for me in this whole documentary. That was the mind blowing moment. Like, wait, hold on. Like, he, and I'm assuming he wasn't alone. Like, there was others along with him creating the textbooks for like specific highly, you know, technical fields within the Army. Textbooks with comics, like comic book textbooks, so they could be trained quicker and faster. I think the one was like the accountants, they shrunk the training from 6 months to 6 weeks.
Insane.
Because these guys could get this information down faster through comics than a classic textbook.
And That's crazy. And that was pivotal for him, because once the war ended, he then comes out and goes back into comics because,
yep,
he's now realizing, oh, my comics can have a greater effect than I ever knew was possible. And it took through the war and making those finance books and seeing the impact that it had there. Another thing, you mentioned the Fantastic Four. I was not aware of how pivotal the Fantastic Four was to Marvel in general. The fact that coming out with characters that he really cared about, that he really loved, it was actually driven initially by the fact that DC had the Justice League. And I thought they were saying, oh, they're going to make the Avengers. Like, no, we're making the Fantastic Four, creating relatable characters. And that's when they got their first fan letters. That was so interesting to me. No fans had ever contacted them, yes, until then.
That, there's a moment to stop. That was one of those, wait, what did he just say? Type of moments of going, yeah. And like walking through that and what was the impact? You would assume that they would have gotten fan letters like all along, but for them to arrive later and to make those characters like that. Yeah, that for me was another like really interesting detail of the whole story that you never would have guessed ahead of time.
And hasn't Kevin Feige mentioned his desire to really remake the Fantastic Four? Has he mentioned that?
Yes, it is. It is like, I don't know if he's said like it's his favorite comic or he's just kind of talked about how it's so crucial to the Marvel brand. But time and time again, he has talked about, wanting to redo Fantastic Four. And I know when Disney bought Fox, that was a part of like, everybody kept sweetening the deal. Like, oh yeah, Disney's getting this and this and this and this. And now Marvel can finally make a Fantastic Four movie because the other entries into the Fantastic Four have all just been purely Fox. So that I think is part of the reason that, you know, Feige maybe have pushed for that or, you know, whatever. But though, yeah, as we'll talk about here in a minute, like I still think they don't know how to crack that.
This documentary did get into some of the grittier details, like you mentioned, some of the stuff that you had known beforehand. That phone call between Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, that was hard to listen to.
Live on the air, like that's live on radio.
Everybody had heard of that moment. It was insane.
Yeah, and that's what's getting the most reaction. You know, that's most of the posts are about Jack Kirby post-documentary, pardon. You know, the reactions that are coming out about the documentary. Most people are talking about Jack Kirby's son slamming this documentary, feeling like they glossed over it and didn't really give it enough attention. And that my reaction was like, I don't think they glossed over it. Like they aired that whole thing.
And if you haven't listened to it, what we're talking about is after there was a split between Jack Kirby, Stan Lee, and Steve Ditko. Like basically, yeah, they were like, Stan Lee's getting all the acclaim. We're moving on with our lives. There was a public spat where I believe it's like Steve Ditko or Jack Kirby is on a radio show being interviewed, and they as a guest have Stan Lee then call in. And Stan Lee kind of starts the fight. He kind of,
yes,
is like, I just want to, it's so great what you've done. No matter who gets credit for what, for the characters, I just want to say this is great. But he's like, but you didn't you didn't come up with the characters. I came up with the character. And then it was just like from there then, well, but the characters were an idea is nothing. You only if you create the thing, like, and we visualize it. He's like, but you didn't write it. And I wrote the dialogue. You never read the thing. And it was like on.
It was, I usually don't get uncomfortable with those things. And I was getting very uncomfortable and just listening to this comment. Like, I've sat through crazy conversations. I've been the person there to like be the mediator. And that was like, what? And remember, like, this is on live radio.
I think that's maybe why they felt like this wasn't a behind the scenes, never before heard. No. It's the thing that if you were an Ultra fan, which there's plenty of people much bigger fans than I am, you would have been waiting for this moment in the story, kind of like yes. Jack Kirby's son saying, hey, they glossed over it. I'll say, even though we're saying, hey, man, it was a hard thing to listen to. That's the only real bump in this gloss that they have on him in this. And it still feels like a Disney Plus documentary of like, if this is as dark as it gets and just this one real moment, like nothing really else in this is paints any sort of even close to a bad picture about Stan Lee. It's all very praise oriented. It still kind of feels like a Disney Plus documentary. I don't know. I don't.
I think you're
saying that it kind of felt darker than that, but I felt like even it's like, whoa, they went there. And then they immediately moved on to something else.
I guess my commentary is I don't feel like when I hear like glossed over, I assume more of just like,
was not talked
like
about at all.
Like it wasn't talked about. It wasn't there at all. It is very short in the grand scheme of the whole documentary. It is a very, very small part of it. And mind you, I mean, Stanley, I want to talk poorly about the dead, but he is not a humble man. he has no problem tooting his own horn and does so quite a lot in his own words throughout this whole documentary, right? And even like in the documentary, they allow him multiple times to make his case for why he thinks he should be credited as the creator of these characters. And I'm leaving, again, not knowing a lot, like not extensively researched all of this or anything like that, but just taking a documentary at its word and it being like, the name of the documentary is Stan Lee. Like I walk away going, yeah, Stan, I'm not buying that from you. Like, yeah, you share the creatorship of these characters. It would be different if it was like a novel, right? But like you're in the medium that you're in here. Like,
well, and their creative process, which was super fascinating, where yes, he would basically yes. verbalize, hey, I think we need a character that has these powers doing yes. this kind of a thing. We need to get from point A to point B with this villain interjected. Go to town.
And then I'll come back in and write in the dialogue after you've already drawn the pictures of it.
And there was almost no like second, maybe there were drafts and stuff, sure, but overall sure. it was like, here's the idea. Somebody else goes into their warehouse and figures the whole thing out, then comes back and then he's just finishing touches on it. Kind of makes me go like, was the dialogue that necessary if the pictures were made without any sort of a choice whatsoever. It's so funny to me, like, but that's why it's even more crucial that this was a joint effort between and he even says it in the documentary, but then he kind of negates it later on. But it isn't the artist, it isn't the writer, it's the pictures and the story. And I'm like, well, you should have listened to your own medicine yeah. a little bit.
I don't know, I think I credit it to, you know, when a musician wins, let's say, record of the year.
It record is both, or song of the year? Because what we talking?
Well, song of the year goes to just the songwriters. And record of the year goes to the artist and the producer. Like if
the
you
version
open
you hear.
Yeah, like you, the producer, the guy who's actually mixing it and making it what it is, taking the band and making the band, you know, hearable and presentable, they get just as much credit, you know? That's where it's like, and I think that's even a weak illustration of this, because it's especially the way they describe it. Yeah, it's just like, yeah, you're creating this together. So that's where I kind of like, yeah, I know this is a bigger fight than what the documentary gives it airtime to be. Because yeah, it always bubbled out. But even in the midst of it, I'm kind of going, yeah, I'm walking away on Jack Kirby's side of this, even though it's a Stan Lee documentary, you know?
It definitely didn't leave him in a very good light, but I'm so glad that I got to hear that. You had evidently heard more about it, but I was like, oh, I had no idea about this whole world. I don't think it tarnishes him by any means. It's all fact and record and we all know about it, but I think without that moment would have been an oversight, I believe.
It would have been a false presentation of who he is and how all the comics came about, for sure. And I mean, you hear people like a Kevin Feige talk about the past, even David Mizell, the podcast you sent me, when they all talk about the Marvel of the past, they mention all those guys. They don't just give it all to Stan Lee. Like those guys, even I think they recognize, especially now as you're making movies, they're so tied to the visual aspects, not just the story aspects, right? So they're given the just credit as it is. And when you look at the credits of the movie, it says created by Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, or the other guy.
Yep. We got to mention the origin of Spider-Man is great, because it was he fought for this character, wanted to have it. His publisher said no. They basically said no, this isn't going to work. A kid with superpowers. Mm-hmm. This is ridiculous. Why would a kid would never, like, they got to be an adult and they can't have normal everyday problems. And then so he puts it in like the last magazine that they're about to. I guess they had a separate magazine and they were gonna just put him as the last character in there and then just like sunset it. And then it blows up and the guy just like comes around and was like, remember that character we loved so much? I just loved that. I just kind of lost it for a second. I was like, that was a great little nugget.
And then now Spider-Man's the most popular comic book hero of all time.
He is? Seriously?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just curious. This is a bold statement for you to put your flag on. Is there like numbers? Is there like, oh, according to, or is this just according to Eddie? Mostly because I haven't read a Spider-Man comic myself, so I can't really speak into it. I have read some X-Men though a couple years ago.
I will look for a source and share a source with you, but I have seen in multiple things, this is
gospel truth. Okay.
Well, and I think also from a
sales number,
if we're just talking like financially, I don't think there's much of a...
I don't know why. I would have assumed it was like Batman or Superman, something in that realm. But that would make sense. That he is definitely like, he's what you see when you go around at Halloween a lot. But
yeah, if it's not... Yeah, I'm sure Batman's up there, but I'll look for a source here and see what I can.
It's okay, Eddie. We'll just make it gospel truth, whatever. We just make up our own truth on this. Well, that's it. If you have not seen the Stan Lee documentary, go on Disney Plus, go check it out, because it is well worth your time if you are even slightly interested in Marvel and comic books and the MCU. Go check it out. It's a great find. It's a great... you're just going to enjoy it. It's a nice, well done, well shot, and it goes down a fun little road. Next, we have a new trailer that just came out, another full trailer for the next animated film from Disney Animation, Elio. How should I pronounce that, Eddie?
Elio, and it's not Disney Animation. Isn't it Pixar?
You're right. I was wrong. I was totally wrong on this. What is the Disney anime? Oh, it's The Wishing Star.
Wish.
That's what's coming out this fall. The Elio, is that coming out next year?
Yes.
Okay. So we've still got a lot of time before we get that. Maybe they're learning to try to market a little bit better than they did with Elemental, which we will talk about next week. spring to 2024. Anyways, Elio. Eddie, what were your feelings?
I need to mention, we're not reviewing Elemental this week because Pixar did a delayed global release. Why? I don't know. No movies have been doing this for a while now. But yeah, I don't get it here in Central America until this Friday. So I could not go see it this weekend.
So we got a full trailer. This is like the first full real trailer that we got for Elio. So we got a little bit more of an idea. It's called a teaser, but we got an actual idea of the origin of the story of what's at stake. Eddie, what were your reactions to the new trailer?
I like anything that is extraterrestrial, as you know. So I enjoyed, like, I was very intrigued by that and interested to see where they go with it. The animation style was interesting. I don't know if it like grabbed me right away.
Classic Pixar.
Sure. Style. I mean, it was reminiscent of like Luca. So I was a little like, oh, are we just borrowing, you know, a little bit more of that? It kind of reminded me more of that. But story-wise, I'm very intrigued. Yeah. And I thought it had some cute, clever moments in it too.
We get a taste of what is at stake in this with apparently he is the trial of Earth.
Earth.
The trial. Yeah. We're not stuttering. The trial of Earth is at stake here. Somehow his mom's attached to like some of the warnings or the like looking for any kind of feedback from Earth. But I like that it's a very simple premise of like, we've been asking for sending out into the universe to speak to aliens. And finally aliens are speaking back and this kid accidentally gets pulled up into it as they think of the leader of Earth.
Can I get your hopes up here a little bit?
Okay.
It is directed by, I don't know who wrote it, but it is directed by the screenwriter and co-director of Coco.
Ooh.
And it's produced by the associate producer of Coco.
So this is the Coco team's second.
Or less. It's not Lee Unrich, because he's left Pixar. He was the main director.
And one of the first editors, of Pixar.
Of Pixar ever. He is no longer with Pixar. However, a lot of the other creative team from Coco are the ones behind this. So if you listened to last week's episode where we were just kind of spitballing where Pixar has been in the past few years, I think we both kind of resoundingly said Coco was the last, like, big home run.
The the best film that they've made.
I said best Pixar movie ever.
But like the string of ones that they've made, they have not made a better one than Coco, which was 2017, 2016.
Are you saying ever or since Coco?
Since Coco. Because Inside Out is still right up there for me.
So. I know. And I was getting a little nervous. I'm like, hold on. Wait a minute.
We have to go back and revisit our numbers. No.
Who are you?
No, we talked about this last week that they haven't really had a better one since Coco. And we kind of walked through all of the different Pixar movies. If you want to listen to our previous episode on that. I don't know that this one strikes me as going to come close to that territory. Maybe it's just because I've been snake bit once too many times. It is interesting. It is kind of quirky and fun. I did hear somebody say something that I can't get out of my head, that it has more to do maybe with comic books and that kind of thing. But this idea of what is more interesting, special human person, whatever, living in a normal world, or a normal person living in a extra special world. And I think that's what this movie is, more of the latter. So it got me thinking, Eddie, what do you think is better? Like a kid living in New York City and he got bit by a radioactive spider and now he can do crazy things, but he's still living in this world, or kid gets fish out of water, pulled into the universe and is now with aliens and everything. And do you get what I'm saying?
I do. And I think it's a fascinating question. I think it's a brilliant question.
I will take the answer for it. I will take the credit for it because I don't know who said it, but it stuck in my head.
I'll credit you because you're a genius. I would probably go with, I prefer stories that are a normal person, an extraordinary world. I think at its core, that's what The Lord of the Rings is. You've got hobbits who are the most normal, ordinary people thrust into an extraordinary world and situation. And I think all of, just so many stories are coming to mind where I'm like, and I mean, to go back, I mean, that kind of is what Coco is. You've got a normal kid in the land of the dead, you know, like, I think that's where I would land on that.
Eddie, you did it. I was sitting here going, I'm hard on the other side in the other camp. And then I think you might have won me because I was like, where are you going to go with this? What are the examples you're going to bring? Because I was kind of more on the other side.
Think of Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. I mean, that's the essence of that is you get four ordinary kids who get brought into this extraordinary world. And I think as most viewers, you know, of movies or readers of literature don't view themselves as a superhero or extraordinary. And we kind of live in a world right now where it's kind of like, everybody is special. Well, when everybody is special, nobody's special. and I think we all recognize that, like at our core, we have normal lives. Like we get up around the same time every day. We do basically the same things every day. Like we drive and, you know, we go to work, we do this, we come back and like we enjoy, there is beauty in the mundane. And so I think we can better identify with heroes and with characters who are normal like us and then get thrust into a normal into an extraordinary situation, because then it allows us to kind of escape our reality and be able to go, what would I do if I was put into that situation? Would I react the same way or how would I react differently? You know? And I think as an audience member, as a reader as a viewer, that is a very grabbing experience where it's like, I don't shoot webs out of my hands. That's just not going to be who I am. However, I'll give this caveat, especially after watching the Stan Lee, I think that's one of the things that is so endearing about Spider-Man is he's a teenage kid who is awkward and has moments that we all can relate to where it's like, and we connect, where he's kind of, Spider-Man might be the exception to that, where it's like, he is a normal guy and his extraordinary situation or world that he gets thrown into is, you know, the powers that get thrust upon him. But why, you know, Spider-Man's really hard to connect with.
So I've been kind of thinking about is one of the down...
Superman, why Superman's hard to connect with.
You're right. The Superman, I don't know if there's a syndrome. I don't know what the right word is for it, but Superman has never connected with me because he is a all-powerful being that all he has to do is just don't go near kryptonite and you're good. Stay away from kryptonite and you can do whatever you want to basically in this world. And so it kind of just would frustrate me that he would somehow always end up near kryptonite. So you've got that.
Which I got to say, I can identify with. Besides gluten, I am impermeable. Like I'm undefeatable. But if you get me near gluten, okay, you know. Then Eddie, I fall apart. Then that's, you know, gluten's my kryptonite.
I do love this. And it is a great phrase, kryptonite. It's my kryptonite. You can't stop this. So that's the downfall for the extraordinary person in the middle of a normal world is that ability to identify with somebody.
How did we get here? Why are we talking about this as we talk about Elio?
Because that's what this movie is. This movie is little kid plucked out of his normal world and dropped into an extraterrestrial world of craziness. The downfall I see of that, of the one that you love, is it can kind of start to become, there's zero way that this little kid should be able, or this person who has no abilities, no whatever, should be able to save the world, take down whatever. It can feel contrived. Like, sometimes if like when they're fighting other obviously strong, amazing creatures and they're somehow killing them or stopping them and they have had no formal training. Like sometimes that's where it can go over the top of, you're like, no, they shouldn't have been able to bring this down. All the
right.
crumbling to its knees, this advanced race from another country. Like that's insane. There's no way this should happen.
Well, I think any good story along those lines of the ordinary guy in extraordinary circumstance, rises and falls on your secondary characters. If you don't have good, strong secondary characters that make those moments believable or plausible, that provide the means or the training or the whatever, it doesn't make sense, right? You don't have Luke Skywalker without Obi-Wan Kenobi and Yoda.
And Han Solo.
Right? Well, and that too. Yeah. I mean, you put the team around him. You have all of those things. You know, you don't have Frodo and Sam making it to Mordor without Gandalf and Aragorn. Like, this is why I have seen Return of the King well over 100 times, maybe a couple hundred times. I still cry every single time Aragorn runs into battle and he turns back and he says, "For Frodo." Ball my eyes out.
You run past him when you're like, "I'm there too. Oh! I'm there with you."
You know what I mean, though? I think so. That's what I will be interested in with Elio, is whether or not you get the strong secondary characters. What makes Coco is not Miguel. Miguel is cute, endearing, but I think what makes Coco incredible is the whole family and how they have so many interesting characters around him. And I would say, from someone who knows Latin culture, like, accurately depicts what a Latin family is like. I'll be interested, you know, in Elio. What is it? Like, does he meet some like aliens that like befriend him and help him through all that? You know, I'll be interested to see how the story unfolds. And it appears that way from the trailer.
I think I still have a portion of me where I like watching spectacular beings and spectacular humans, because it makes me think, oh man, what if I was that? Like, what if I had that ability? What would I do with it? What would I use it for?
Yeah.
The X-Men is great, because like, okay, if I had to have a mutation, sure, which of these mutations would I like to have? And it's always Nightcrawler for me.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's for JB, it's always
Nightcrawler. So I think that's what, I like about Thor, because he is definitely a god come to earth. And that whole cafe scene where he like, what is this? Drinks coffee, bring me another. And he just has like no social awareness of what everything else is going around him. I feel like it bridges the gap of like, okay, it's interesting. And it's like, oh, what if this person was here? But then you also still believe it when they're the ones that save the day, because it shouldn't necessarily be this other person. But I get it. I can kind of see both ways. I think you've really pulled me closer to your camp on it, but I think I'm still on team. I liked seeing a supernatural person here on Earth versus going to a crazy place.
Yeah. And
partially, maybe I've just been overloaded with so much CGI at this point that I'm like, I'm totally down for getting out of space and coming back down to Earth for a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I see where you're going with that. And I enjoy those stories too. But I guess if it's a one or the other, I'm going to be attracted more towards the ordinary. I have to give a shout out to Lewis's space trilogy, Out of the Silent Planet, Hideous Strength, Paralandria. That's what it is. Like, he puts himself into these, and they're such simple stories, but really, really fantastic.
Okay, moving on. We have some new dates for MCU movies coming out, the major movies coming out. We kind of have to revisit this ever so often to kind of say, hey, the dates are moving. Movies are moving. We've been waiting for some of this since they started hearing, oh, they're going to start pulling back the reins on the dates for some of this stuff, trying to get less content out there. And we've talked previously about some of the shows, especially shows coming out this year. But Eddie, do you want to kind of walk us through some of the movies that have changed that are going farther, and one that's coming in sooner than we expected?
Yes. So the one that's happening sooner, which I don't think is a huge surprise, but is Deadpool, the third movie, is being moved up. It was previously November 2024. It's now going to be May 2024. And this is a funny little thing that I just heard about this. Ryan Reynolds is not allowed to improv on the set of Deadpool. They are currently in production of this. And because he is a WGA credited writer in the movie and they're on strike, any improvisation that he does on set would be considered crossing the picket line and he could get kicked out of the guild.
Are you kidding me? Come on.
No.
I'm all for them fighting for their rights and for carrying the banner. Newsies references galore. But come on. Not being able to improv.
I know. I've seen this in two different locations. Yeah. Yeah. I know.
I feel like this movie's going to take a major hit if nothing changes soon. Like, are you kidding me? He's not allowed to improv?
And nothing's changing soon. Yeah. Oof. Yeah. So that's the big one where I was like, what? But it's moving up. So something must be going well. Captain America Brave New World. It's getting pushed back. Deadpool is taking its previous spot. Yeah. It's just getting pushed back to July.
It's basically they already have all these dates. And they're just ping pong with which movie goes in which date. And we're going to just move things back and move things back.
So Thunderbolts, it was previously in the July slot that Captain America is taking. It's getting pushed back to December 2024. I don't remember a Marvel movie ever getting a December slot. Do you?
Spider-Man.
This does... Hey, that's true. That's true.
No Way Home or whatever it was. Yeah.
What I find very interesting in that is technically Thunderbolts is taking the third Avatar movie slot. That is where the third Avatar movie was supposed to be released, but they've pushed it back to December 2025, which is, I don't understand.
I mean, it's still going to come in faster than the first sequel of
sure,
Avatar.
Sure. For sure. And then moving along more quickly, Blade is getting pushed back about 6 months from September 24 to February 25th. Fantastic Four is getting pushed back from February 2025 to May 2025. So it's getting pushed back. The big one is Avengers Kang Dynasty is getting pushed back a whole year from May 2025 to May 2026. And Avengers Secret Wars is also getting pushed back a whole year from May 26 to May 27, which is giving huge speculation across the internet as to whether or not they're rethinking the whole ending to the multiverse saga because they may lose their actor for Kang. He is in a lot of legal problems. Nobody knows what really is up on that
one. Lose isn't the right word. They're going to fire their main actor. Like, they're not going to lose him to somebody else to DC. Like, they're going to lose him because he was doing, allegedly was doing some pretty horrible, like, things that were inappropriate and bad. And so, if it all comes out and it's true, and I think they're kind of biding their time right now, but the more this goes on, this has given them runway. It's given them runway to kind of figure things out. They've set it up and they can pay it off if they want to, or they've got plenty of margin. They could go a whole nother way. They could rewrite a few of these stories to kind of help give them a way out of this. Do you think that Jonathan Majors is actually going to end up in another Marvel film?
I have no idea.
Eddie, you gotta tell me. What do you think? What does your heart tell you?
I mean, I look back and go, we a year and a half ago would have said Johnny Depp's never going to be in another Pirates movie. And now we're on the other side of all of that and go.
Things change fast.
Well, yeah, I think they will eventually go back to that money. Well, I have no idea. I've not read up on the stories and what the allegations are and all of that. I think they gave themselves an out with the way Ant-Man and Quantumania ended. So I think if they want to take it, they could and just act like that credit scene never happened.
Yeah, it was like, let's just pretend like both credit scenes, Loki, but Loki's coming out this summer. How much is that going to be tied?
Sure. Or there's also the possibility this whole variant thing, they could easily just cast somebody else as Kang and be like, he's another variant of Kang. You know, like there's
true.
Multiple variants of Loki that look nothing like the original.
Crocodile.
Loki.
Are we going to get a shark Kang?
Yes,
Kang. Are you ready for the shark Kang? What's the Kang you want to see?
I want to see a kangaroo Kang.
Oh, there we go. Kangaroo.
Kangaroo. So yeah, this is all huge shifting around. My gut tells me a lot of this. The ones that, you know, Deadpool, Captain America, these are kind of true, sure bets, you might say. The other ones that they're still trying to figure out and what, you know, they've been kind of aimless here in the fourth phase. I think they're taking a beat and going, okay, let's make sure we do this right. We can't afford another phase like the last one.
So to finish up, we got Secret Invasion opening this week. Eddie, you excited about it? It's going to be opening up while you guys, if you're listening to this podcast right now, it should be live right now. You can go check it out on Disney Plus. But we've got a whole Samuel L. Jackson series in front of us.
Yes, I'm game for that. And I like the kind of spy, you know, underworld noir feel of it already.
More of the Miss Marvel? Little.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes. Very much so. Very much so. I know you will bemoan that. I know you're a big Miss Marvel fan. You got all giddy in the Stan Lee documentary when they talked about her.
For 2 seconds. I was waiting for it. I was like, when are they going to talk about Marvel? Marvel, Captain Marvel. This doesn't feel like a show to me. I'm sure it probably will once we get into it, but similar to how
Falcon and Winter Soldier.
The same energy from that. That's kind of what I'm getting from this. This looks like a bigger budget project, just in its action and intensity. Or maybe I'll say it's kind of like Moon Knight, similar kind of energy there, where we've been getting a lot of like other types of content, or maybe it's just the Miss Marvel is still holding on, and then we got She-Hulk. They kind of took a departure. This feels like, okay, we're doing an action series again for you. But man, so many episodes, some intense, like getting closer to Samuel L. Jackson and his character. I need to get caught up on what's happened to him. Where has he been? Where did we last actually see him? I need to get on and find one of those like 5 minutes. I should have prepared for this. I mean, like, these are the things you need to listen before you watch it today.
What we don't need to do this. Just go to our favorite YouTuber, Screen Crush. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he will have something.
Go watch that.
Yeah, go watch him. He's got something.
Last thing before we get to a deep, deep dive we need to do into today's film that we're going to spend a ton of time. Yes.
Yeah.
Eddie, you listened to the Tim Ferriss episode with David Mazel, the real creator of the MCU. Give me your reaction. I've been dying to know ever since you told me before we started recording.
This was incredible.
I know, right?
Okay. How do I say this? This felt like, okay, here we go. You ready?
I'm ready.
This might blow your mind. If Frozen Into the Unknown was the docuseries version of Creativity Inc., I felt like this was the podcast version of it.
Say that math again for me.
If Frozen 2 Into the Unknown, the making of Frozen 2, however long that title is the docuseries version of the incredible book by Ed Catmull, Creativity Inc. If that's the docuseries version, I wonder if this is the podcast version of that.
I love it. That's a great way to describe it. I got Creativity Inc. vibes listening
it. And I will tell you, yes, at the beginning, I appreciated your advice of skipping the ad read.
The first 7 minutes.
And it took me a while. Like, there's something about Tim Ferriss, but he or his team does a fantastic job in preparation.
The research is incredible.
Research is incredible. Almost on par as the hot sauce guy. Almost on par as him. But loved his line of questioning. I thought he, outside of his voice and everything that drives me nuts, I thought he did a great job. His the way he asked questions and framed them and interjected, I thought he did a really great job. Following this whole career is just incredible, and what this guy has been a part of and how he thinks, how he mixes business and creativity.
Yep.
I could have listened to a whole nother, 2 hours of him talking that out and describing all of that. And in particular, I loved the mechanics of the deal that he crafted with banks to get Marvel their first financing, and so that Marvel could do it at zero risk. Not minimal risk, zero risk. And the deal that is put together, and even the way that he describes it, I'm like, this guy's a really great storyteller in and of himself. Just the way that he's
to make business deals interesting.
Exactly, exactly. And like Wall Street banking contracts. Let's come on. But it is like the whole time you're listening to this, I'm going, man, this is really intriguing. And I was driving somewhere while I'm listening to it. And like I got to the place I was going and I didn't want to get out of the car. Like I sat in the car until I absolutely had to listening to it because I was so intrigued by it. So you heard JB's plea last week to listen to this. And I know, dear listener, we don't always trust the things that JB tells us to go watch or listen to. Miss Marvel. But he's right on this one. He's totally right.
I'm so glad, Eddie, that you got to hear it from the horse's mouth, even if it had to be through Tim Ferriss's mouth. I'm so glad. And
like, so many things in this were interesting, like his stint in Broadway, at Disney, like that whole story of him trying to convince Disney to buy Marvel at $400 million in 99 is just, now in hindsight, you just laugh about it. It's hysterical. What they ended up paying, like $2 billion for it or something like that?
$3 billion.
Yeah, that's just, it's crazy to me.
So this is your second plug for listener. Go listen to this interview, Tim Ferriss Podcast with David Maisel. It's incredible. It's awesome. You should go find it wherever you listen to podcasts and then rate our podcast while you're there. Oh, wait, we're not there yet. Okay, so Eddie, that's it for our content, for the conversation on the Disney news that's happened this week. Every week it seems like we've got nothing to talk about, and then boom, we've got four extra things to talk about. But that's not why people are here. They are really here for
Lindsay Lohan
and Herbie Fully Loaded.
Cue the Disney sound effect.
The IMDb description for Herbie Fully Loaded. Maggie Payton, the new owner of Herbie, number 53, the freewheeling Volkswagen bug with a mind of its own, puts the car through its paces on the road to becoming a NASCAR competitor.
And with that, your life has been forever changed by another episode.
It was horrible. What a horrible IMDb description. Almost as bad as actually sitting and watching the movie. Eddie, you said you had so many hot takes of this film that you wanted to get across to our listeners. You just were dying to review this film, that you watched it weeks ago in preparation.
I must confess, the opposite is the truth. I kept like doing that thing of like, oh, I'll get to it. Oh, I'll watch it while I'm doing this. I'll do this. And I kind of pushed it to watch like this afternoon. And then I had a whole bunch of work things just like boom, 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 pop up and get to it. And I never got to watching this.
I love that you watched the Stanley documentary
Yes. Well, I almost sat down and watched it. I'm like, it is Father's Day. Like Sarah and I are like sitting down after, the kids have gone to bed. Like, I'm not watching Herbie Fully Loaded here. Are you kidding me? Like, I know better than that. And so you had just texted about the Stan Lee thing. So I'm like, oh yeah, let's watch the Stan Lee thing. Let's do that. And I just never got to this. So I have nothing to offer. I didn't even get on to Wikipedia and read a plot summary. I, as a kid, remember watching the original Herbie movies that were cute and clever, but that's about all I can say on the matter. So JB, please enlighten us on why or why not we should watch Herbie Fully Loaded.
The only things worth talking about in this film, one, is the opening montage. It's a great opening montage.
We love a good montage.
The old Herbie, and it brings you all the way back through. And there's even some funny moments where it's like he's a celebrity, but then he goes on hard times. And in his high apex moment, he's hanging out with Knight Rider. Like, it's kind of a fun, it's like part history, but then also new history leading into modern day. That was interesting. That was kind of fun. The only other part of this movie that was fun, well, other randomly, Justin Long's in this film, and Michael Keaton and Matt Dillon. Matt Dillon playing a kind of hokey bad guy, other car racer in this. It's not great. He's spending way too much time on people that he should not care if who they even exist, and he's challenging them to races because he's got such a big ego. Honestly, the best part of this was my son. I've tried watching several of the films on our list with him, and he doesn't care, and he moves on to another room. Eddie, he was fully engaged in this film, and he was
really
emotionally invested in Herbie, unlike most other characters he'd watched on television, except for Mario. He was like fully engaged watching it. He was like, ha ha ha, take that, when Herbie beats Trip Murphy in the Cheeto car, as he kept on saying, because it's sponsored by Cheetos, his stock car. When he gets sold off to a junkyard, not junkyard, but like a derby, where it's like their big thing is 10 cars enter, one car leaves, like what you've seen from Cars, where they're just like bumping into each other. Right. He was like, oh no, what's going to happen to Herbie? Demolition Derby. It's just, he was like, no, we can't do it. He was getting so like wound up. And then in the final race, when obviously Herbie wins with amazingly horrible CGI of him racing along the fence line to get out of to get across a pileup, he's like, Herbie won, Herbie won, Herbie won. And I was just like, that was better than actually watching the film, was just how giddy my son was about this film.
Why do you think he connected with it so much?
He loves cars.
Okay.
It's a toy. It's like it's making its eyes slapsticky. Move. It's slapsticky. He loves that kind of a thing. The car has personality. There's a lot of physical elements to the car. There's some really bad CGI as well. Those were the moments that he loved, and it's just ridiculous fun for him. Seeing the car do the things that cars never ever do. And it's like the physical version of what the Cars movies are. But besides that, there is no reason to turn this thing on. Lindsay Lohan she didn't do a bad job or a worse. She was just herself in this. Justin Long is just himself. Matt Dillon was over the top, unnecessary. But overall, do not go watch this film. I know, Eddie, you're going to have an NA for this one because you can't vote on a movie you didn't watch, but it's still going to be a one for me because I'm never going to watch this movie ever again. I might get the highlights and like send it to my son. Hey, go watch the YouTube highlights of Herbie, but never watching this film again.
Yeah. I don't feel like I missed out. I do feel bad. I don't like having an NA on the score sheet though.
You can come back. Like, you can go watch it yourself, and then next week we can get your full take on it if you want.
Well, you know me, like I have to at least finish the task. I can't, you know. But I mean, like, I don't like having an incomplete on the score sheet here. Like, we've come this far.
Ed would not be okay with that.
A Ferguson never quits, and this feels like quitting.
You watch it and you tell me, and then we'll at least update the website.
Okay.
You don't have to give up.
But I'm like, I feel like I we have to get to the end of this, and I have to be able to say
I've watched
all every movie. Like, why would I get this close? We are on the 5-yard line.
Hasn't there been one that you like didn't finish?
There have been. So James and the Giant Peach, I barely made through and was just like, I can't do this anymore. But like, I watched as much of it as I possibly could, but it was mostly like I just scrubbed it to the end. Like I just fast-forwarded.
That's all you gotta do. Just scrub through, and if anything catches your eye, just stop for a moment, then scrub through again.
Yeah,
just do that.
But
just so you can get it on the board. Hopefully, maybe before Wednesday, when this releases, you will have been able to fast forward through this movie enough.
So you're giving it a 1.
Oh yeah, easy 1.
So, and it's not a 0.5.
No, it's not a 0.5. It's just dumb.
There you go.
And with that, your life has been forever changed by another episode of Honey, We Made a Disney Podcast.
Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your other favorite podcast. And hey, guys, while you're there, please, come on, give us a 5-star review and share it with your best friend.
You can also check us out at honeywemade.com. We can see the remainder of our full movie lists as we continue to go through all of Disney's movies from 1988 to 2005, including next week when we review Sky High.
Thank you for listening. And remember, 10 cars enter, 1 car leaves.